I'm Joy Avino, and this is Get Your Spirit in Shape, United Methodist Communications and UMC.org's podcast to help us keep our souls as healthy as our bodies. Today is another conversation in our now award-winning Meet the Bishop series. At the recent United Methodist Association of Communicators Awards, our Meet the Bishops episodes won Best in Class, an honor for all of us involved in the podcast. Today, I'm sharing my conversation with Bishop James Swanson of the Mississippi Conference. Bishop Swanson talks about growing up in the church, his remarkable call to ministry, why he encourages others to share glory sightings, and how carrying a rock in his toiletry bag when he travels helps him keep his spirit in shape. Meet Bishop James Swanson. Bishop Swanson, welcome to Get Your Spirit in Shape.
Oh, thank you, Joe. It's good to be on the podcast with you.
As I looked at your bio, I noted that you have served as the bishop of the Holston Conference and the Mississippi Conference, both of which are in the southeast jurisdiction of the United States. Is that where you were born and raised?
To be honest with you, no, I actually was born and raised in Houston, Texas.
Oh.
But I moved to Atlanta to go to seminary and was recruited by the South Georgia Conference.
So you just kind of stayed
most
in that area.
Most of my ministry was in the South.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. What was it like growing up in Texas?
It was a good life in that respect. As a kid, I was not United Methodist. I was actually born and raised in the African Methodist Episcopal Church. And later on, my mother moved her membership to to the Church of God in Christ. And it was from that church that I actually left to go to seminary.
When you were growing up, what were some of your favorite things to do?
Well, being in Texas, one of my favorite things to do was to, horses and that kind of stuff. I mean, as a kid, cowboys and all that. Playing that game. And I also loved basketball. Baseball was my first love as a kid coming up. Then moved from that to running track. I used to run track as a youngster in high school. And playing sandlot ball in the community, football and baseball and basketball and that kind of stuff.
So you were quite an athlete, it sounds like.
Well, I waited until I was in high school. I played a little bit in middle school, what you call middle school now. Back in my day, it was called junior high.
Yeah.
Played organized basketball. But in high school, I ran track. I didn't play any other organized sport.
And did you have a favorite subject in school? Did something you liked to study?
Yeah, I pretty much loved world history, geography, and that kind of stuff. Even took one foreign language. I took German.
Oh, wow.
When I was in school. I spoke and do Deutsch a little bit back then. And I was pretty good in English, grammar. Mm-hmm. I was a good student. I graduated high school. Out of a class of 109, I was number 14. So
wow.
I did pretty good.
Yeah. It sounded earlier that church was just kind of a part of your life growing up. Do you remember some of those early days of going to church?
Oh, yeah. Church was something that was like breathing air. I mean, it was something you did that was a part of every fabric of your being. Not only was my mother a primary mover in my upbringing, but members of the church. And the church gave a lot of shape and form to my sense of being, my sense of who I was, and purpose and meaning in life. A lot of it came from the church. Pastors who heavily influenced my understanding of myself as a person of worth and value and dignity, as well as Sunday school teachers who tremendously influenced that. Because in my day and time coming up, those people were not only in your life on Sunday, but they were in your life Monday through Saturday as well.
How so? What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, they lived in your neighborhood, and some of them were not only Sunday school teachers, but they also taught you in school. So you couldn't get away from them.
Yes.
I mean, whatever you did in life, whether it was good or bad or whatever, it was reported back home. You saw them in the grocery stores. You saw them in the neighborhood park. As you walked down the street, those people They were just a part of every fabric of your life. I mean, they were not just the people you saw on Sunday. Some of them you even ran errands for. There were ladies in the community who I went, they wanted something during the week from the grocery store. I would go to the grocery store and shop for them and bring it back home and get a nickel and a dime or a quarter for doing that.
Yeah.
So they were part of every part of it. There was nothing that you did in life that those persons who you went to church with were also a part of your school. They were part of just everything that you did in life. Yeah.
Was there anybody that stands out that was, you know, especially kind of influential in your life?
Well, yeah. There were people like when I was in the AME church coming up in Green Chapel, uh-huh. There was a lady named Mrs. Gray, who I always remember. She nurtured me a lot, saw some things in me. In fact, she and two other ladies, when I was about 8 years old, literally laid hands on me, so to speak, and pronounced that I would be a preacher.
Wow.
So these people were highly instrumental in calling me to a life of making myself available to make a difference in the world. And it wasn't just the preaching piece. It was that you are a person of worth and value and dignity, and that God has placed you here on earth to make the world a better place. And you're sort of chosen. You know, it's not understanding in the African-American community, you had this sense of back in the 50s and 60s and of looking for sort of messianic figures who were going to come along and help lead our people to wholeness and freedom and liberation. And it wasn't a sense of a Messiah, but of people who would come along and be leaders in our community. Mm-hmm. And so ladies like Miss Gray and even my sixth grade teacher, Mrs. Mundine, and others, who said, you're going to be somebody special. And you have that mantle thrust upon you, and you tried to live up to it.
Wow. Was that the catalyst that sent you into the call to ministry? Is that the first inkling that you knew you were being called to pastoral ministry?
Yeah, it was that. And Reverend Arthur J. Bundage, he was my first pastor that I can remember listening to him preach. And he can preach. and it wasn't so much his spirited preaching as much as his simplistic preaching. I mean, he could preach so that at an early age, I could understand what he's talking about. And I knew that Jesus loved me more than anything in my life because of him. There were even people like Mr. Gray, who was my seventh grade teacher, who bought me a jacket when I could not afford a jacket to be a part of a civic club, who said to me, you're special and I want to be a part of your life. I mean, people like that who just touched you all along the way, you knew something was special for you. And then later on, I had some kind of mystical experiences around knowing that I was called to ministry. I mean, I've been knowing it ever since I was 7 or 8 years old.
Wow.
Fought it for a long time, but I knew it.
Did you ever?
It was no doubt in my mind.
You never considered another career?
No. That was my aunt, my mother's sister, who used to call me. We used to hear, and some of them thought I was going to be a medical doctor.
Oh.
They used to tease me about that. I kind of knew in the back of my mind. I didn't know what that really meant. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I didn't know if that really meant pastoral ministry. But I knew it was something helping people. I knew it. And I knew it. At some point, I figured I would go to the pulpit. And I knew it all of my life, just about.
Hmm.
I mean, it was a burden in a sense, but it was something I wanted to do and something I didn't want to do.
I hear that a lot with call stories. You mentioned about mystical experiences. Can you tell us anything about that?
I tell some people about it and others I don't because, you know, I hesitate a lot of times because I don't want anybody feeling like somehow they have to have that kind of experience called to ministry. But mine was a summer of, I guess it was maybe 58 or 59, because I was about 8 or 9 years old when this happened. The first one was I woke up on a Saturday morning. I never forget it. I knew it was a Saturday morning because I didn't go to school, but I also knew it was the summer. But I knew it was the summertime. And my sisters were, my two older sisters, Helen and Lola, were outside. They had gotten up early and gone to play, and I was still in the bed.
Mm-hmm.
And I woke up, and I heard somebody calling my name.
Hmm.
Most people did not call me. Nobody called me James. That was never. In fact, even to this day, very few people call me James.
Okay.
That's just not the name people call me now. This person just said James, and I woke up, and they were just standing there. At the head of my bed, and but it wasn't a regular person.
Right.
This was a sort of a heavenly figure.
Wow.
And I thought I was dreaming, so I rolled over to go back to sleep, and I heard my name again. And this time I'm looking at the wall, and I can see this figure standing there, and I can tell at this point that this is either an angel or this is Jesus. This is not regular people, you know.
Right.
And it scared me.
Sure.
I mean, I was terrified.
Yeah.
And I sat up in the bed, and I jumped out of the bed at that point, and figure again said James, and stretched out both of his hands. And by that time, I was just, I didn't know what to do. And, and so I just put on my short pants that I wore that day before and ran out the house, ran down the stairs because we lived upstairs. Told my sister, Helen, who was sort of surrogate mother at that time because my mother worked, my dad was no longer with us, and told her somebody was upstairs in the house. And she ran upstairs and she said, there's nobody there. And I said, somebody was there. And the lady, we lived in an apartment, the lady who lived in the apartment beneath us started inquiring, asking, what did I see? And I told her, and she told me, she said, that was either an angel or the Lord calling you.
Yeah.
And she said, you just need to say the Lord's Prayer 10 or 12 times straight, and he'll come back. And I said, and to this day, I've never done that. I won't do that 10 or 12 times
straight.
Because it scared me.
Yeah.
And then later on that summer, walking down the street, I met a guy who put his hand on my head and said to me, hello, little preacher.
Mm.
And looked up at him and kept walking, turned around, and he was gone.
Wow.
So I knew in my heart that's what that was. But I was too young to process it.
Sure.
I did not tell my mother, and I didn't tell my pastor. I probably should have. So I tried to process it on my own. And it took me years before I really even told anybody about it.
Wow.
Other than my sister.
I love hearing those stories. It's really interesting about how people are called. And there are a lot of different ways. You're right. I mean, people have those experiences like that, and others have very different experiences that where they feel called to ministry.
Right.
But so you served in pastoral ministry for a long time before becoming a bishop. What was your favorite thing as a pastor to do?
Wow. The thing that I really enjoyed was spending time with people as they began to figure out their relationship with God. And that was more one-on-one.
Yeah.
Of course, I love preaching, and everybody knows that. Anybody who's ever heard me preach, they know I love to preach. I mean, I enjoy that to the highest. But and a lot of folk think that that would be my favorite, but my favorite is really one-on-one. A lot of folk think I'm a big-time extrovert, but really I'm more for an introvert. I really do like one-on-one.
Yeah.
Listening to people, listening to their stories, helping them to hear what God may be saying to them and helping them try to figure that out. And to see how God is so miraculously revealing God's self to them and watching the light come on in a person's life. I love to do a little bit of counseling in crisis with people. I love doing that, watching relationships being healed. I really love that. And then also, I really love watching churches discover collectively their ministry and watching them grow, not only numerically, but spiritually, and enlarging their vision as to what does God want us to be with this community in this day and in this time. And that was a joy to my soul when I saw people from all various walks of life, those who were blessed intellectually, financially, and other ways, link hand and glove and heart and soul with others who struggle financially, who struggle in their own lives to do great ministry on behalf of the Lord. That was the joy of my time as a pastor. And to be honest with you, I miss it. I miss that as a bishop.
Yeah, I guess
really do. Yeah, you don't get a chance to do as much hands-on stuff, you know. And I miss that.
Well, you talked about having a love for preaching, and I noted that you have spoken all over the world. I mean, the list of countries on your bio is pretty long. How did you get into that kind of preaching?
Well, you know, I've been blessed, and I really say that because I have never, I want to put it this way, I've made friendships with people, and most of my invitations have come not because I was a bishop, but because I was a friend to someone.
Hmm.
Sometimes it's been because I went on a mission excursion and did not know that I was going to be called on to preach while I was there. I just went. And so while I was there, I was asked to preach. And those kinds of things have happened.
And you also said in the pastoral ministry, when I was asking you your favorite parts of pastoral ministry, you mentioned about helping people see God at work in their lives. And I've heard that you like asking people about glory sightings. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, we have a thing in Mississippi. I guess I have to be careful how I say this because I don't want people to misunderstand. Mississippi, statistically, in the United States, we seem to always rank at the bottom end of everything. And as a result of it, sometimes the people from Mississippi will make jokes like, if it wasn't for us, everybody else would be on the bottom and that kind of thing, you know. And yet Mississippi is a really blessed state. I mean, we gave the world Oprah Winfrey and Elvis Presley. I mean, you got to think of some of them. You know, even Jim Henson with the Muppets and all of that kind of stuff, who came from Mississippi. There are some wonderful people who have roots in Mississippi and who have gone on to do some wonderful things. But sometimes we get a bad bomb rap. And so what I wanted to do was to help Mississippi people to stop looking at themselves as always on the bottom. And I started talking about, where is God really doing some wonderful things? And how can we give God glory? Where is it today you have seen the glory of God? And we started calling those glory sightings.
Hmm.
Where is God doing some wonderful, wonderful things? In other words, rather than complaining and cursing the darkness, why don't we glorify God for the light that is shining and the good things that are going on? And it's from those good and wonderful things we draw strength and energy to tackle some of the darkness that's in our life. And so that's why we talk more about glory sightings, is to help us to understand that, yes, Mississippi has had some things that we're not very proud of, but there are some things that we should really celebrate. And from those, we get the strength and the energy to tackle the parts of our lives that have not really been very good and very pleasing in God's sight. But God's not through with us yet.
Yeah.
So that's what we try to do.
Yeah, and that's true in a lot of areas of life, right? We can choose to look at the dark side, or we can choose to look at where God's at work. What a wonderful ministry to help people through those times. Tell me about your family life. I think I read that you have 15 grandkids.
Well, really, 17.
It's 17 now. Okay, I must have read something that was old. Okay.
Yeah. No. We you know, I have some children who've been rather fertile, and then I have some who have been fertile in other ways. I have my baby girl, who is a wonderful, wonderful girl, who not only has a daughter, but she's a foster parent as well.
Wow.
And so these children also become my grandchildren.
Yeah.
And so that adds to our family. And so we've been blessed. I have 6 adult children, all married now, and all of them have given us grands, except for one who just got married a year or so ago, year and a half ago. And he is a pastor now in Kingsport, Tennessee. So all of my 6 kids have given us children, except for that one. And we're praying that one day they'll give us some kids as well.
Yeah.
So we've been blessed with those 17 who are a blessing to our kids, right from the age of 28 to 48. So they've just wonderful children, two girls and four boys.
Wow.
And so we've been blessed, and with those grandchildren coming along, I have one great grand that is on the way. So
wow.
Even Delphine and I have been really blessed in our lives.
One last question that I ask everybody that I have on Get Your Spirit in Shape. What do you do to keep your spirit in shape?
One is that I try each and every day to turn my attention to the Word of God. I have two to three ways that I do that. One is, of course, I have this app on my phone that reminds me every day to read a passage of Scripture. Hmm. But I also use the Moravian text, and I read that, and I supplement that with the Upper Room. And also with my cabinet, we have developed a piece that we do a daily devotion. I have not only my cabinet, but some other people who are part of that, where one of us will read the devotion of the day, and we will post our sort of musings or thoughts about that devotion. We all read that same text, and one person posts their thoughts around that and what God is saying to them and for all of us as sort of a lesson for the day, and we all will read that. That helps me. I have a time of prayer each morning, but I try to do religiously. Sometimes I miss. It's like everybody else. I get up in the morning running, but I'll try to do that each morning and each evening as well. And then I also have special prayer partners. And one other thing that I sort of took from President Obama, that when I arrived in Mississippi, if you remember, that President Obama asked a gentleman to become sort of his spiritual guide, and this guy would write a devotion for President Obama each day and give it to him. When I arrived in Mississippi, a young female clergy person really impressed me, and I asked her, would she do that for me?
Hmm.
And so she does, and she sends it to me via email just about every day, and I read that, and usually, and it's unusually canny, each one is so pertinent for me each and every day. And so between those things, that helps me to stay focused and mindful of who I am and what I am. And when I'm traveling, like I'm doing right now, I carry with me a scripture that is engraved on a rock that I read, that is actually in my sort of toiletry. I know I've got to use them every day, and I read it every day.
Hmm.
And it says, Lord, lead me to a rock that is higher than I. Hmm. And I read it every morning, especially when I'm traveling, Psalm 61:2. And so that keeps me understanding that there is God.
Yeah.
And that God is higher than me, and that I am not the sum total of life, neither am I the end, the beginning and the end of the life. But there is someone who is greater than me, and I must seek him each and every day of my life in order for me to be who I am seeking to be. And so this is something I started about 3 years ago carrying this rock. I don't even remember who gave it to me, but I decided to put it with my toiletry items because I know that I'm going to use them each day. And in fact, while I'm shading, it's always right in front of me, and I read it maybe two or three different times while I'm shading each morning. So those are the things that I do. And, of course, I read. I'm a crazy reader. I can't read one book at a time. I usually read two to three books at a time.
Wow. Well, I am so grateful for your time today. This was a wonderful conversation, and it was really great to meet you today.
Well, thank you, and I appreciate the fact that you all are doing this, and I feel honored to be asked to share my life. I hope it's beneficial.
That was Bishop James Swanson of the Mississippi Conference.
To learn more about him and all of our bishops, go to umc.org/podcasts and look for this episode. We've put links on the page to help you learn more about Bishop Swanson, to help you find more conversations with our bishops, and links to some other podcasts by United Methodists that you might enjoy. We'd also appreciate if you would take a moment to review us on Apple Podcasts. Good reviews help people find us, or you can simply email me from the episode page and share your thoughts and suggestions with me in that way. Thanks for listening, downloading, and subscribing. I'll be back soon with another conversation to help us keep our souls as healthy as our bodies. I'm Joe Iovino. Peace.